the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That it is indeed. We're here in person. Welcome back. Yet another edition of Bucket Strategy Investing. We got more of the best in money information coming up just ahead on the program. Brain Trust here with me, Johnny Dean, the former Professor Rick Plum. We're here from Lucia Capital Group, as we are every day. We're going to start it all off with a discussion on inflation. Inflation. And I guess more specifically, how do you account for it in your retirement strategy? And what is inflation anyway? And the government measures it, I think it's like seven or eight different ways. How do you measure inflation? How are you supposed to? Even if inflation averages only across the board 2% or less over a long time period, and by the way, there's no guarantee that it will behave one way or another. I want to mention that. It can have a negative effect on how a fixed income portfolio turns out. How do you account for it? And how do you prepare for it? So we're going to talk about that. Among other things, that's coming up. You can give us a call right now with your money questions. Phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637, or you just head over to wealthed.com, send us an email, click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Either way you do it, you'll reach the Brain Trust here in the studio. Professor Rick Plum joins us now from Lucia Capital Group. You need to get a strategy that addresses each of your needs, one that aims to make sure your retirement goals are covered the first time. So how do you do that? Well, you call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group. There's a number, 800-644-1150. What you need is a bucket strategy, and the Brain Trust advisors will put one together for you. Talk to any of them about your financial future. Give yourself a little bit of peace of mind. 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. On the air, our number in studio, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Some room on the phones right now, so give us a call. I talk about inflation. People might look today, Professor Plum, and say, what inflation? Others will say, oh, it's everywhere. It just depends on which item you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on whether you are looking at a product that had to be delivered through the trucking industry and things of that nature, where the pricing has come down a little bit because of the transportation costs, or is it something else that's medically related where the costs have gone up quite a bit?
Yeah, look at things like medical costs. If somebody has been in the, you know, needing medical care for the last 3 or 4 years, they'll tell you inflation's out of control. You talk to somebody who's trying to pay tuition.
Out of control.
Why, I don't know, but that's the way it is. You talk to somebody else who's, you know, just buying groceries at the store, they might say, you know, I mean, I haven't seen too bad price increase.
But even within that grocery realm, there's things that from time to time go up. I mean, there's times where beef or chicken or something, the costs of turkeys and things of that nature went up a lot, and chicken went up a lot recently because of the new rules for how they get raised. They have to have more space and do all these other things, so it costs more. So the costs of certain meats have gone up quite a bit. Now, what the CPI in many respects has done is that, well, people are tending to eat less of that, so we'll shift. Instead of using steak, we'll use hamburger, or instead of using hamburger, we'll use steak because of the pricing. They can manipulate it a little bit.
Well, a little bit. But when we talk about inflation, what most people think of is a general rise in prices. Mm-hmm. And I think what people really, at least those who are old enough to remember, refer to more as the 1970s, you know, late
70s. From 71 to 77, the CPI increased almost 50%. So you had a very large increase in pricing in a fairly short period of time.
Yeah. Now, people who own things like real estate or, I suppose, in some sense, commodities and things like that, they did very, very well because they sort of just took a ride on it. Those who were on fixed incomes, big problems back then.
Right, because the expenses went up and the incomes didn't, unless you had a very good cost of living allowance on your particular income stream.
So we've seen,
which was rare.
Right. Now, so over the last 40 years, which I realize seems like a long time, but we've seen over that period of time really high inflation, relatively high from what we're used to.
The beginning of that 40-year period of time.
Right. And then we've seen very little inflation. So how does this relate to somebody who's putting their portfolio together?
Well, how do you account for it? You can't just say, well, today I need $5,000 a month to be able to live my life the way I want to live it. So therefore, I'm just going to count on $5,000 a month for the rest of time. And so I'm 65 now, and when I'm 95, I'm just going to be spending the same $5,000 a month. That may actually happen, but you don't know for sure because it depends on what's going on in your life. So how do you account for the increasing costs potentially of Medicare, of medical expenses, of fuel costs, transportation. Uh-huh. Everything in your life potentially will be going up in price. The only thing that won't go up, and this is an unfortunate or a fortunate side effect for an unfortunate issue, more and more people are carrying new mortgages into retirement, 30-year mortgages into retirement, because they bought the house, the last house, when, you know, 2 years before they retired, but they've got a fixed interest rate mortgage at a very good rate, today's rates, and that portion of your budget won't inflate. The property taxes will, but the payment doesn't. The payment stays the same on a fixed rate mortgage. So at least that portion of that individual's budget will remain the same for the next 25, 30, however many years are left on that particular mortgage.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things during inflation about being a bond issuer, which is what you are when you hold a mortgage, as opposed to a bond buyer or a bond holder, which is what you are in times of inflation.
I'm paying it back with cheaper, potentially cheaper dollars later on in life. But I can also look at it. If my mortgage is $1,000 and I needed that $5,000 a month to meet all my bills and live, 20% of my budget is not going to be impacted by the inflation factors, whatever they may or may not be.
Yeah.
So I can maybe look at it slightly different than I would if I'm a renter. Rents will probably go up. I can't say guaranteed on anything, but rents are going to go up. Over the next 30 years.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I'm guaranteeing that 30
years
from now.
They may go up over the next 30 days.
You never know. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER. We got some lines open, as I said. Call now, 877-752-6637. Any money question or issue that you have, Brain Trust standing by to answer those questions. So how do you determine which inflation number you use? Because you look at the government. You got the CPI, the Consumer Price Index.
They have multiple CPIs.
They have CPI for...
You. Not for you, but
the
CPI
letter U.
U, the urban consumers. And then you got CPIW for urban workers and clerical workers, but it's still a consumption-based issue. They just subset it down a little bit.
Yes, of course. You got one for elderly people.
The CPIE, which is... a joke, but it's supposedly set up to more mimic what elderly individuals are spending. Most people that look at it call it the experimental, CPIE for experimental. And then you've got the C-CPIU, which is a chained CPU, which is what they're trying to go towards for determining the non-COLA on Social Security. Sorry about that little dig.
Well, and there's another one that's something of a joke, I think.
Well, I mean, that one's based on CPIU. I think it's on CPIU.
They call it the chained CPI.
Oh, the chained one? Well, the chained one is updated more often, but it's also, it reflects longer periods of time, so it tends to understate the growth of the consumer price index as compared to the direct CPIU. So which one do you use? And does the CPI even reflect what you are doing, what your expenses are all about? Somebody who's extremely healthy going into retirement may not have the same types of increases as somebody who is not very healthy, because the budget, at least somebody who's not very healthy or has a lot of medications and other things, a lot of their budget is being taken up with medical expenses. Medical expenses are going up quite a bit. But if you're somebody who doesn't go see the doctor, I know a lot of retirees, you know, they do their checkups and from here to here, they spend a little bit on medical care, but they're not on any medications. They're not, you know, they don't have any real ongoing chronic problems. They don't spend a whole lot on medical costs, at least not now. And so their budget doesn't have the same impact as somebody who's using a lot more of this one particular area. Not everybody is the same. And that's the difficulty. The other side of it is people change their habits, their spending habits. It isn't the same. We don't buy the same amount of goods and services each and every year. Some years we buy more. That's not an inflationary issue. That's just we decided to do more this year. Some years we do less because we can't afford it, we don't want to afford it, or there's other things in life going on. Maybe it's not us in our immediate family unit that's having medical issues, but somebody around us who we're not responsible for paying, but we're there for support, not financial, but emotional support. So we're not doing some other things. We're spending more time doing things locally that don't cost as much. We're not going out to dinner as much. We're not traveling as much, but we're helping support, at least from an emotional standpoint. So how do we go about creating a game plan for the next 20, 30, potentially 40 years for some people without trying to make at least some assumption on an inflationary factor? Now, one of the things I do not like about most calculators and computer programs that create retirement scenarios is that you pick an inflation factor today and it adjusts your income each and every year for the rest of your life. So when you're in your 70s, 80s, 90s, it just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. It doesn't take into consideration that somebody who is 90 years old probably is not doing the same amount of things, whether it's driving. Gosh, we hope a 90-year-old's not driving as much as a 65-year-old. Whether it's traveling, typically they don't travel as much. Going out to eat, they don't go out to eat as much. Shopping for clothes, they don't
golfing,
buy as much.
No golfing.
They can't golf as much. And so it's just they do fewer things. Even though those things may cost more, their budget, their individual budget has actually come down.
877-PLANNER, that's our phone number. And we're going to go over a couple more numbers, too, when we come back and talk about how using a different inflation number can affect your portfolio. It really can. Anything that's on your mind, money issues, questions answered right here, Bucket Strategy Investing. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Call now with your money questions. I said we got lines open, and I meant it. So give us a call. We're here to answer those questions for you. Whatever concerns you have on anything regarding your portfolio, regarding your retirement, regarding your strategy, we'll talk to you about that. 877-752-6637 spells out PLANNER. So talking about inflation here, Professor Rick Plum, we don't have a whole lot of inflation. I think most people would agree right now. They can't, try as they might, they just can't seem to create inflation. I don't know why not. It's a fairly easy thing to do. But anyway, so we've got different types of ways to measure inflation. Now, we mentioned creating inflation in your portfolio. Not creating inflation, but creating
well, determining how much your portfolio needs to be.
Yeah, exactly.
At retirement, how do you know? At let's say retirement is age 65 for you. You just decided at 65 you want to, you know, call it quits and you know enter the next phase of life retirement. How do you know how much money you need to have in your portfolio to make it work? Well, there's lots of assumptions that go into this. One of those assumptions is, well, what's my inflation going to look like? And it does have a fairly large impact on your overall portfolio. Let's say you've got your Social Security, which you hope has some cost of living to it. Maybe not. You've got a pension that has a COLA on it, and so you're not worried about that. But over and above that, you want $1,000 a month from your portfolio. This is just doing it for easy math. $12,000 a year. Well, if you figure you're going to have a 30-year life expectancy, just because that's the number you're choosing, it depends how much money you need in the pool to be able to pay out that $1,000 a month with inflation over your 30-year lifetime depends on how much you think you can earn and how much you think inflation is going to erode that earnings power. And so we look at it from what they call a real rate of return standpoint. Real rate of return is what you're earning less what the inflation factor is. And if you think that you can earn a real rate of return of, call it 4%, which means inflation plus 4, to get that $1,000 a month, you need a little over $200,000 in your portfolio to be able to continue that payment and end up with zero 30 years later. But if you don't think that that's a realistic number, inflation plus 4, and maybe you thought it was inflation plus 2, you know, you could do a little bit better than inflation, but you're not going to outpace it by a significant margin, then instead of $200,000, a little over $200,000, you need almost $270,000. 20 to 25% more, 35% more money in your portfolio to give you the same income by changing it from a 4% real rate of return to a 2% real rate of return assumption. That's a pretty sizable difference in what you're looking at. So how do you go about doing it? And that's where the trouble comes in. And the other side of it is, like I mentioned earlier, do you inflate it each and every year going forward and continuing to spend plus? Now, I've been doing financial planning for a couple days now, and I've never had somebody call on January and say, okay, last year CPI was a positive 2%, so raise my distribution by 2%. Or last year the CPI was a negative number, so drop my distribution by 0.15%. Most people don't monitor their inflation that way in their portfolio when they're retired. What they monitor is, am I building up cash in my checking account, or is the checking account getting empty too soon towards the end of the month? Am I not having enough? Does it feel tight on my budget? That's where people start looking at it and say, you know what, I could use a little more money. Does it happen on an annual basis? I haven't seen it happen that way yet. It happens periodically. And when they do change it, it's not a change based on, well, they said CPI was X, therefore I need to rise or increase my spending by X. They raise it to meet the needs that they have. Whatever life has changed, whatever has pushed them to have this type of a spending habit. Now, that's where an advisor can hopefully come in and say, you know what, we need to do something, or you need to do something about your spending because you're starting to spend too much money. And usually that's not an inflation problem, that's a lifestyle issue.
Yeah, that's, I was going to say, that's a spending issue, because sometimes people just start adding things in.
Right.
You know, the way they do. They're, well, you know, I can use
a new
car.
I can afford that.
I had no
that.
Car payment when I retired, but 5 years later, I say, yeah, I need a new car, so I'm just going to buy one. Now you got another, you know, $300 a month or whatever it is.
So the reality is the spending habits change, whether it's because of CPI, which is actually the lesser of the issues, or it's because of life. And life happens. It increases and also decreases spending habits over time. Typically, over long periods of time, the spending actually, from a sheer dollar amount, doesn't increase, and in some cases actually comes down. I was talking with somebody who retired 10 years ago. They set up a payment plan that they thought they needed for their retirement. It was X amount of dollars per month. They are still getting the same X amount of dollars per month 10 years, 11 years later now, except for they're noticing that they're moving money out of their checking account and putting it into little CDs here and there because they don't want to stop the distribution. They're taking it because it was set up that way, but they've never increased it. They just have more money in their checking account, more money sitting in cash around waiting for something to do, but they're happy. They haven't decided. They just don't spend any more money now than they did before. Now, inflation has been fairly tame, but we have had some inflation over the past 10 years. Not this individual, not the way they're spending their life. And so life is the more important driving factor in determining your overall plan.
Yeah, it is. And you know, one of the bigger things, something that gives perhaps a bigger impact to inflation, even if it's tame, is a long retirement. I mean, somebody
yes.
who retires at age 60 is going to have to deal with inflation a little bit more than perhaps, on average, somebody who retires at age 70.
Or longevity has an issue.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, somebody who's not working, you know, 10 extra years, that's like living an extra 10 years in some cases.
Right. Now, you know, that number where we needed about 270,000.
Yeah.
I obviously did the wrong number here.
We're going to do a little calc. All right.
Instead of 270, if your life expectancy is only 20 years, you need less than $200,000 to have that same income, but for 10 years less than the one before.
Okay, yeah. So once again, you see the impact of that. It's longevity. Is one, and the actual
longevity,
number that you wind up using.
How much you can earn, and how much you need to adjust that spending for outside forces, one being consumer price index, one being inflation, and it's specific to your inflation. So it's all a matter of, and it changes all the time. And that's why you don't just start a plan when you retire and never readdress it. You're always reviewing, monitoring, at least once a year, every 6 months. Just, you know, sometimes as you get further into retirement, you don't need to review and monitor it quite as often, maybe not every 6 months. But the first year or two of retirement, you should be addressing it every 3 months, because that's when the transition is happening. It's because when we're not retired, we have an idea of what retirement looks like, but we have no real good, strong facts about how it's going to work. That transition period, the first year or two of retirement, gives us a lot of data that we can deal with it and say, okay, this is what retirement really is. I'm getting more used to it. I understand it. So let's see how it's going to work, playing it out from here forward. I've almost never, it's very rare that I meet somebody that says, I need this, and it doesn't change.
Over the years, you're saying?
Over the first 2 or 3 years of retirement. It's either more or less, but it's a good starting point, and we have to have a starting point. So how do we get there? And also, if we're talking about that 30, 20, 30, 40 year time horizon, that means that you can't be so secure, so conservative that you have all your money in CDs, unless you just won the lottery. That person can have it all in CDs. He'll never spend all, or they will never spend enough money. But if you've got a normal retirement, most people cannot afford to have it so conservative that they don't have something that has some volatility and growth. And then that's where you have to really get into the strategy to manage it.
So we'll have one last question for Professor Plum on this when we come back. We're also going to get some of your emails. We got some lines open right now. Give us a call. Doesn't have to be on this. Could be on any money topic, anything that's on your mind. Our phone number, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Coming right back. Don't go away. Well, I'll tell you what, you want to learn about your portfolio and how it gets all put together. We're going to talk about inflation a little bit more in just a second and how that's done. But if you want to learn in person and get your money questions answered, a great way to do that is to meet the Brain Trust. How? How, you say? Well, they're coming to a city near you, especially if your city happens to be Las Vegas, Seattle, or Phoenix over the next couple of months. First workshop of the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop Series, spring style, is in Las Vegas, Saturday morning, February 20th. Join the Brain Trust, Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the gang in Las Vegas, Saturday morning, February 20th. It's free. You go to wealthed.com to sign up, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. Seattle, Washington is on the 27th. And then on March 12th, again, these are all Saturdays, Saturday mornings, Phoenix, Arizona. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three. There will be more after that. You can find out where they're going to be. And again, you want to come by and say hi, meet the Brain Trust, get your money questions answered, and learn all about bucket strategy investing. Once again, wealthed.com, wealthed.com. The whole schedule, I think at least through April, is there at wealthed.com. Our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Before I get your opinion, Professor Plum, on what somebody, some suggestions to sort of squeeze the inflation risk from your portfolio, that out of Reuters, I want to ask you this. You mentioned that you have a number. Sometimes you use 2%. Sometimes you use 3%.
Real rate of return.
When you're putting together a portfolio, how do you decide, first of all, and number one? And number two, I mean, do you use more inflation early on in the retirement and then back off later? How does that work?
Well, it depends on the individual. You have a lot of different options. One of them is just to use more spending early on. Say, look, for the next 10 years, I want to have my normal, what I project to be my normal retirement, plus an extra 10 grand a year to do traveling. After the 10 years, we'll figure out something else and whether or not we want to continue doing that. So you kind of front load the portfolio as far as the safety side of it. The other interpreted question I'm looking at there is, how do you determine what rate of return to use? Well, it depends on the individual. If you've got somebody who's a little bit more aggressive, they've already got a portfolio that's made up of a lot of real estate in other areas, maybe you can have a little bit better inflation-adjusted total rate of return. If you've got somebody who's very conservative, more in the fixed income side of the house, doesn't like the volatility of the market, doesn't like the illiquidity of real estate and other things, doesn't want to be a landlord, whatever the case, then you have to be a little bit more on the lower side of the real rate of return house. So you have to really get into the individual. That's why, again, these, my opinion is, these standalone calculators are very tough to deal with without looking into all these other areas. And most people just don't look into them. Heck, there's maybe a lot of advisors that don't look into it. They just say, oh yeah, we can do X percent, let's just make it work. So let's try to map it out. And then the whole thing is, the money I need to spend in the first several years, you can't really look at the entire portfolio as, so I've got this portfolio of $1 million and I think I can earn on average 5%, 6%, pick your number. But the reality is, some of it's going to be earning less, some of it could potentially be earning more, but the money that you need to spend in the first X number of years, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, whatever the number is for you, needs to be a lot less volatile than the overall portfolio as a whole. So that's the safer area, which means it's not going to be earning very much. But that's the whole idea, is that you do need to have some money in that more volatile area to outpace this potential spending habit you've got. And we all have it. Anyway, we like to spend money. So let's design a portfolio around you, your risk tolerance, your spending, your longevity, your other incomes. There are times where you really don't even, we talk about people that are upset or worried about trying to figure out how to manage their required minimum distributions. The reason they are worried about managing their required minimum distribution is they don't need the money in the first place. And they've got enough money from other sources, so the portfolio is kind of an extra thing. On the other side, we've got people that are more concerned. They don't care about the required minimum distribution because they're taking more money than that out of the portfolio already. Their spending habits are different. And so we always have to build into these different ideas what's happening in your specific life. So just using a flat number, I need $1,000 a month. We were talking with that number earlier. And the reality is, $1,000 a month, if I'm doing that and it's 30 years later and I'm using a 2% inflation factor, that means I'm going to be able to spend $22,000 at the end of my 30-year run.
From you're talking about per year, so 12
per year,
$12,000 becomes 22. What was it?
22.
22,000 a year.
Now you're gonna make me do the math again.
No.
22,000 a year.
About 22. So create. You need an extra 10 grand a year at that point.
But if I think that inflation is going to be 3%. I need $30,000 a year at the end of the same 30-year run.
Now that's a huge
difference.
That
puts a much bigger portfolio to provide that. 50% bigger for that point.
Well, so you don't know. 2%, 3%, we don't know what it's going to be 30 years from now. I'll tell you what, 30 years ago, people probably were figuring on 6, 7, 8% rates of inflation.
We were using fours and fives for the most part. In the late 80s,
mid to late 80s,
we were using 4 and 5% projections for inflation over a retiree's future.
Yes,
and that made big differences.
It did make a big difference. Now, of course,
that $20,000 or that $12,000 needed to be $52,000.
So, if you needed $12,000 in 1985. You figured that by 2015,
if you wanted to increase it at 5% a year, you needed $52,000 to buy the same goods and services. Now, we know that inflation is not averaged 5. It has not increased that much unless you're looking at college.
No, yeah.
Hopefully a 95-year-old's not spending. Well, they may be.
Well, you never know. Well, okay, so, but back then, at the same time,
that was considered reasonable.
Well, it was, and you could also say, well, okay, I can probably get, 5-6% in my CD or whatever it is.
Yeah, on
Treasuries,
the safe side of the house.
Right, on the safe side, so I know I can at least get that. So there was the potential, I guess, for earning more safely
rather than going out. Yes, but if all I'm doing is earning 5, and I'm spending 5, I'm not getting any headway.
No, that would.
That's a real rate of return of 0.
No, I understand that. I'm not talking about everything in safety. I'm just saying you at least had a little bit. You had the potential of getting more.
But one thing that most people can't agree on, at least when they're looking at the stock market, is that while it is volatile on a year-to-year, two-year-to-two-year period of time, over 10, 15, 20, 30-year periods, call it 20, 30-year periods of time, it tends to be very close to a specific average, 9%, 10%. You don't see 20-year time horizons with 15% rates of return just because inflation was, 10 or 5. You tend to see it revert back to a norm because over that period of time, we do get the higher and lower inflations at the same time. Higher inflation tends to push stock prices over time. Lower inflation has another effect right now. We're pushing it because of other reasons. It's going to come back. So you're earning 5 on part of it, but you're not earning a commensurate much higher rate of return on the other part of it and your overall portfolio. So if I had a 50-50 mix, my rate of return is like 7.5%.
So it's still a scary number to try to
achieve.
That's
only a 2.5% real rate of return if I'm looking at a 5% inflation.
Yeah, and we're talking about over 30 years.
Over 30 years.
Yeah. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Lines are open, so give us a call with your money, questions, comments, whatever it is, 877-PLANNER. So let me bring this up here, a couple of things. This came out of Reuters, some ways to squeeze inflation risk from your portfolio. I'm going to see what you think of this. The first thing that they mention, if you're concerned about inflation and your portfolio being attacked by inflation over the 20 or 30 years that you're going to be retired, they suggested replacing bonds with Treasury inflation-protected securities.
Boo, hiss, no, dumb.
That's why
stupid.
I brought it up first.
Oops.
Oh, we got a plums down there. Okay.
Treasury inflation protected securities are typically a little bit on the longer side, so they're 10 plus years. They're earning nothing. You think the interest rate on a 10-year Treasury is low? Look at the interest rate on a 10-year TIP. And we have to have, so you're going to, it may do slightly better than a 10-year Treasury if we have inflation, but you got to bet on some inflation to be able to get to that. And over the next 5-8 years, do we really see a lot of inflation? Tips to me are a trading instrument. When people are fearful, they buy the living heck out of them. When they're not fearful, they sell the living heck out of them. They are volatile as all get out, but they don't earn very much. The only way they're going to earn something is if we get higher interest rates, which means bonds will do better if you're buying new bonds, and inflation. Right now, we don't have it.
They suggest this. They say if you're concerned inflation is coming back and also astutely concerned that your bonds will lose value, you may want to keep it simple. So you have a 60% stock, 40% TIPS allocation. And then they went back with history. Your 3-year annualized return through September 30th would be about 12% and nearly 8% over a decade. That's about 2 percentage points better than a standard 60-40 mix of stocks and bonds. The volatility would be a relatively low 9%. That's their rationale.
So they're saying that it was 2% better. So they're saying that the 40% allocation to tips,
yes,
created an additional 2% on the overall portfolio because the 60% made the same amount of money.
That's what they're saying.
And it wasn't coming from reinvested interest because there is very little interest on those tips. So it was coming from the appreciation in the inflation. How much inflation have we had over the past? If I bought a 10-year bond 10 years ago, I was probably earning 4%. I find it very hard to believe that, you know, I don't like that. I'll have to do some research on
that
one.
Yeah, do some, run some actual numbers on that one. A couple of other ideas they have, but I want to take some of your phone calls when we come back. So give us a call, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. You got emails. We'll get to those as well. May get to a couple here before the top of the hour and certainly next hour. Go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Click on the Find Your Answer link. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing continues right after this. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, another hour coming up, so keep it right here on your radio and or television consoles. Be answering your money questions over the next hour plus. So join us, and if you have any money questions, you can call us right now, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. I mentioned to Professor Plum before the break, there are some ways that this article in Reuters came up with to try to squeeze inflation risk from your portfolio, because you do have to pay attention to inflation. We've been telling you this hour. You got to pay attention to it. You don't want to overstate it, but you certainly don't want to understate it. And not knowing what it's going to do over the next 30 years makes it a very difficult task to try to do this for your portfolio. But we try. I mentioned this because they brought this up, replacing bonds with treasury inflation-protected securities. Those are called TIPS, T-I-P-S. This article suggests, Professor Plum, as I said, that you have a 60% stock, 40% TIPS allocation in order to prevent inflation from taking over. They're telling you your three-year annualized return through September 30th is about 12%, and nearly 8% over a decade. And what they said was that's about 2 percentage points better than a standard 60-40 mix of stocks and bonds. You're calling foul on that one.
I'm calling more than that. I just don't see where that's happening, because we're assuming that if they're looking at purely the bond portfolio and what impact the bond aspect. Changing out a typical, whatever they call typical bond allocation, 40% allocation, for a 40% TIPS allocation, that would, in my book, say that the other 60% that's in stocks had to be the same mix, same identical mix. Because otherwise, how can you know that the 2% that they're saying came from the TIPS didn't come from the stocks that they chose instead? So if we make that little bit of a premise, that means over that 10-year period of time, that TIPS outperformed whatever they were using as bond, you know, normal bond portfolio and a balanced portfolio by 5% a year. 2% coming from 40% of the portfolio means that 40% had to outperform by quite a bit. And so I just don't see it happening. I looked at the five-year average return of an intermediate term bond fund over the last 5 years, and I'm just looking it up on Morningstar.com, just the average, and it was 2.43%. And the average total return on a TIPS fund over that same 5 year, now this isn't 10, this is 5 year periods of time, was 1.43%, 1.46, about 40% less, not more, less. The TIPS, and I'm not saying TIPS don't have a place in a portfolio, they do. For somebody who knows how to manage the risk return profile in association with other types of fixed income instruments so that they can blend the different types of instruments together and maybe get a reasonable return and reduce the volatility. They do play a role in that area. But just to say I'm going to blindly put my money into a TIPS fund for 10 years and hold on to it and say that in the last 10 years when inflation has gone down, which is a good, when interest rates have gone down, which is good for bonds that have a fixed rate, that the inflation protected securities beat that? That story is bogus.
Something wrong with those numbers. Now we really need to, you said you did not have the 10-year, or you do?
Well, I looked up, I just went into the funds themselves. I didn't have an average for 5 years. So I looked up a fund that had about the same 5-year track record as the average and looked it up what it did over a 10-year period of time. And I looked up a fund towards the top of the list of what And I, the first one I looked up didn't have a 10-year average, so I had to find one that had a 10-year TIPS average. And over the 10-year period of time, the two funds that I looked at, the intermediate bond was 3.89 and the TIP fund was 3.25.
So it's still less than
still
the
slightly
bond.
Less. Yeah. It was a little bit closer.
But it still is no way that it's going to
significantly more.
No. So on the suggestion that you replace bonds with TIPS and do a 60-40 mix of stocks to TIP allocation, that's
bunk.
That's bunk.
But like I said, TIPS have a place in a portfolio for somebody who knows how to look at how they act at different times. I've mentioned earlier in the show that it is a trading type of instrument.
Yeah, explain how these work, these treasury inflation protected securities.
Well, in a typical, you know, treasury, you know, you go to the treasury and you buy, or you go out and you buy a 10-year treasury bond, not the inflation protected one, the bond. Right now it has a, you know, yield of 2.2%. So you give them $100,000, you get 2.2% for the next 10 years, and at the end of the 10-year period of time, you get your $100,000 back. The interest is set. The interest is going to be the same number every year. And the principal, the face amount of the bond, is set and stays the same. Now, buying it, you know, you may have to pay more or less depending on interest rates. That's a different game. With a treasury inflation protected security, it may be a 5-year bond, a 10-year bond, or longer. That's depending upon how the structure is. But if I'm buying a 10-year TIP, treasury inflation protected security, the interest rate is fixed, but the face amount is not. So if I'm buying a $100,000 face amount treasury inflation protected security, that's the initial face amount. And then every year they readjust that face amount based on CPI. So if CPI was 2%, my face amount is now $102,000. When it matures, if it matured at that moment, my face amount, my maturity value would be $102,000. But the other thing that adjusts is that interest rate, the coupon, the stated interest that it's going to pay every year is a percentage based on the face amount. So they may have a 1% interest rate. And so I would be getting $1,000 the first year because $100,000 face amount. And then I would be receiving $102 the next year. So my income that I'm receiving will go up or down based on whatever the CPI adjustment on the face amount is. Now, it is guaranteed that if I buy a $100,000 bond, that even if we had 10 years of deflation, I would still get my $100,000 back at the end of time, but at the end of the maturity period. But the interest rates are significantly lower because they know they're going to give you potential more movement over the time. Where you might see a 2% treasury for 10 years, it may be a 0.5% on a TIP or something of that nature. So the amount of cash flow that I'm receiving. Now, why are they a trading instrument in my little opinion here? Because the current value, we all know that if I want to buy a bond today that was issued some time ago and is going to mature at some point in the future, I'm buying it in the secondary market. I'm not buying it from the government. I'm buying it from somebody else out there who's willing to sell it. And if I'm looking at it, if I'm really worried about inflation, I'm actually willing to pay more than that $100,000 face amount for that $100,000 bond, because the face amount should increase up and I'll be able to get paid for that money. So I'm willing to pay more for it right now than the face amount. But if I'm not worried about inflation, and I don't think we're going to have any, then I'm not worried to pay, I'm not willing to pay much. And because of the lower interest rate, I'm not going to even pay the face amount because I'm getting less than what's going on. So it's a very emotional play. People buy the living heck out of them when they're worried about inflation, bid it way up, and then they sell the living heck out of it, drop it way down, when there's no fear.
877-PLANNER, we're out of time for this hour. If you need the brain trust off the air, you can call the Lucia Capital Group advisors, any of them, including Professor Rick Plum, at this number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. No fear, another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing is just ahead.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.